Evan Christensen is up first.
Okay, so we're going to move really quick. Using some modeling, conceptual, hypothetical thought experiment type modeling to kind of gain some perspective on big scale and gradual scale changes. Okay, so we all know groundwater response can be very slow. And managing change that occurs over these scales of generations can be extremely difficult. And so what that brings up is the problem of generational amnesia. And what I mean by that is one generation can only, their reference point changes through time. So the first generation for a lake like this, it might be pristine. And the next generation, that lake is clean. It's still good for swimming and good for fishing. And another generation comes along and they recreate at certain times of the year, and fish may be limited by consumption. Generation four, that lake might look pretty, but that's about it. And generation five, it looks nice sometimes when it doesn't smell. So for groundwater, the generational amnesia can be even more difficult because it's very hard to grasp what you're looking at. You can't see it most of the time. So for a stream, that base flow may be reduced, but you really can't see it time to time. For contaminants in water, it may look exactly the same, and you don't know. So that point of reference is even more difficult to comprehend. The other thing is the big scale. So big numbers, big scale, can be very difficult. So just an example here, groundwater pumping in the 7-county metropolitan area, which are the red lines there, you know, 100 billion gallons a day, or 100 billion gallons a year, that's 270,000 gallons per day, over 191,000 gallons per minute. But how do those numbers relate to the amount of recharge that we're getting? So this is simulated average recharge for 2012 to 2016 across the region, and how does that pumping volume relate? Well, it's essentially equivalent to about 1.9 inches over that 7-county metro area, which is a significant amount of percentage-wise the amount of recharge we get, or 100% of the recharge in that box. So a thought experiment. What if we turned off all pumping? So what is the effect of pumping? So here's a simple thought experiment. Let's turn it all off. Let's reach natural equilibrium and turn it all back on at once. And how long does it take to reach kind of the current conditions? So here's what it would look like. This is using the Metro Model 3 groundwater model. So we turn it off. At the top there, no pumping. And we're talking 3 to almost 4 generations before we reach that steady state. So the ability to sort of grasp how that change occurs is very, very difficult, and it makes it very difficult to manage because people don't quite understand the impacts. Same thing with a well. We turn on a well in the Jordan Aquifer. The response is very rapid near that well, within that aquifer, but at the water table where the impacts are really being seen at drawdowns in streams, lakes, and wetlands, it's much harder. So here's an example. We're out 10 years, and we're only at 84% of what that steady state new equilibrium will be. So it's even worse for non-point source groundwater contamination. So we've talked about things like nitrate. The ship might have already sailed on that because the response times are extremely long. We have nitrate applied at the surface. It works its way through the unsaturated zone. That lag time can be decades, and then we're into the groundwater system, it can be another few decades before we're actually detecting it at concentrations we're concerned about. And as Kelton alluded to, even if we could magically turn a switch and start cleaning it up, it'd be several more generations before we're clean. Chloride, the same thing, but what I wanted to point out was PFAS. So PFAS is something that we're really not thinking about as a non-point source contaminant, but we're starting to discover that it can be, and it probably is. In particular, I'm going to talk about PFOA. So a couple studies done recently, one by Rankin in 2016, and one by Zhao in 2015. The 2015 study actually relates to the metro area, looking at soil concentrations of PFOA. And I'm going to relate those soil concentrations to what it could be into groundwater concentrations. So just a point, basically it's detected everywhere. So there's some evidence that there's likely a background soil PFOA concentration out there. And just using a model that we've developed to sort of tackle these large-scale non-point source solutions super stripped down, and I'm not going to go into any of the assumptions. We'll look at how do we load that soil. So we load that soil to reach kind of what's can be backed out of a soil concentration and will result in groundwater concentrations that can exceed the health-based standard, but we're seeing lags of multiple generations again. And then we turn it off, and it's another couple generations before we can clean this sort of thing up. So it's the same sort of thing, like nitrate, chlorides, and potentially even PFAS, of these multi-generational problems. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Leave the video to run.
Leave the video to run.